Hello, you're listening to Speaking of History, the podcast with a focus on education, technology, and history.
The luckiest man on the face of the earth.
Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor.
Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream today.
This would have fighting power.
Hello, you're listening to Speaking of History podcast, episode number 152. I'm recording this on July 10th, 2008. My name is Eric Langhorst. I'm an 8th grade American history teacher in Liberty, Missouri. And today's podcast is an audio recording of a session that I did last week in San Antonio at NECC. It's a session on a great online application for any social studies teacher, and that's the online game known as Elections. Elections is an online game produced by Cable in the Classroom, and I co-presented this session with Frank Gallagher from Cable in the Classroom. And if you were at the actual session, it might help to be kind of a refresher. Obviously, there's a lot of visuals going on, and I'm not able to capture that with the podcast. You can kind of tell what's going on by listening to the description that Frank and I give, but if you want to listen to the entire session, it's about 45 minutes or so. We did have a full room, so they closed the doors and everybody wasn't able to get in. So if you are not familiar with this online game, I'd encourage you to check it out. I do have the link on the blog, so if you want to go to www.speakingofhistory.blogspot.com, there's a couple of links that will help you out. But again, if you're at the session, this might kind of jog your memory a little bit. And even if you weren't at the session, if you listen to it, there might be some tips and some ideas that come up that might help you out a little bit. But it is the full session, and it's just the audio, but I think it'll help out some of the people that were there. So without further ado, here is our session from NEC in San Antonio last week on the online resource Elections.
I'm letting these two guys have two mics in here. I am Rhonda Yates. I am with Cable in the Classroom, and we are here today to demonstrate to you the free resource that we have provided for education in the classroom. It's called e-election. It is a revision from our 2004 e-elections. It's updated for this year's election. And we have two guys that are going to be tag teaming and to demonstrate that to you. E-Elections is free. It's online at our website, and it's available for you. It was provided to you in with three of our members, History Channel, C-SPAN, and CNN Student News. And today we got two guys, Frank Gallagher, who works with Cable in the Classroom. He began his career as a middle school teacher, and he was very instrumental in the revision of e-elections. Over here is Eric Langhorst. He is an 8th grade history teacher from Liberty, Missouri. And he was, among many of his credits to his name, he was one of Cable's Leaders in Learning Award winners. And this most recent award is he is the 2008 Missouri Teacher of the Year. And he is here to help you realize how you can actually use this in your classroom. So we've got two great guys, one with the content knowledge of the game and the other with the practical knowledge for the classroom. So welcome, and I hope it's a good session for you.
Good morning, everybody. Getting here an hour and a half early, making sure everything was just right in the room, watching all the buses pull up and disgorge all the people, watching everybody wandering around. It was just like the first day of school in middle school. flashbacks. So we're here to talk about the elections game that we have, but first it's probably worth saying just a little bit more about who and what we both are. Cable in the Classroom, for those of you who may not be familiar with us, we're the nonprofit education foundation of the cable industry. That means we work with cable companies like Time Warner and Comcast to provide free services to schools, connections, and so forth, and with cable networks like History and CNN and C-SPAN, all of whom contributed to this project. Our whole goal and reason for being is to encourage the visionary but effective use of technology and media in education. And so we work in collaboration and partnership with local cable companies, cable networks, educational organizations, and so forth. As Rhonda said, I came into Cable in the Classroom a number of years ago from teaching middle school math, and what brought me in was a project they were doing on media literacy, understanding how media works, and that's been a lot of my focus, and a lot of my interest in this game has been in that area also. And Eric, as you heard, came to our attention as one of our Leaders in Learning winners.
As a classroom teacher, I've been in the classroom for about 14 years now, and this should be my 15th year. And I've used a lot of cable in the classroom resources over the last several years for a lot of reasons. One reason is that they have high quality stuff. We do things like watch CNN student news, we use the elections game, and a lot of what they provide the teachers are free. It's just available things that you can pull off the internet, you can watch through their cable stuff. And so Cable in the Classroom has really been effective for me in incorporating a lot of aspects of politics or history, and I've just been really happy to work with them on some projects. Frank and I have kind of collaborated on a couple different presentations, and I don't know if this is going to be quite like vaudeville type quality type stuff.
We have a straw voter.
I'm going to just try and kind of talk a little bit today about how this is practically used in our classrooms. And I've used elections for about 3 years now. The version that we're going to be talking about today is up and available now, and it's the upgraded one. So, how many people are history teachers in the classroom, in the room right now? Okay. I mean, what an amazing time to teach history. I mean, like, my eighth graders are, like, on the top of, you know, everything, just because it's in the media so much and stuff. So I'm going to try and kind of infuse a little bit of a practical. How does this look in a classroom setting? How does this look in a lab setting? What are your students going to be learning as they play this game?
Yeah, for a math teacher, once you got past the electoral votes, it was kind of like done. So as Rhonda said, this is one of several online broadband experiences that we have. One is based on weather, and the context of that is sailing in a race around the world and having to deal with weather instances. Another is on Shakespeare and Shakespeare's language, as you probably might know. Shakespeare is the most commonly taught author in the English language, but his words can be a little hard to get into for students, and so this is a way of delving into his words in a fun but meaningful way. But we're here to talk about elections because, as you may have heard, there's this election thing going on. There are some more seats in the front if anybody wants to come on up and have a seat. So our agenda today is we're going to do an overview of the game and talk about its use in the classroom, and we're going to do that by playing it. And we're going to follow that up with some highlights from some research that we commissioned on how elections is being used and to what effect. We should also mention that Eric is recording for podcast. He does a podcast and a blog and several other things that we can talk about later on. So if you don't want to be in a podcast, save your questions till afterwards otherwise. And it's only an audio podcast, so. Okay, so as Eric said, there was a previous version of this that came out for the 2004 elections, and based on teacher feedback, there were a number of things we wanted to change this time around. One of my colleagues, Virginia Bramante, in the back of the room, was... Is that a sign? We'll see how that goes. The Virginia in the back was... I don't know what that was set on before.
Alarm,
one more time? It sounds a little better. A little more normal. Okay. Virginia was leading the project to redesign and update the game and was responsible for managing the developer, which, if you've ever had that experience, it is a job and a half in itself. But anyway, thanks to her, it looks the way it does and functions the way it does. There's some slick new graphics. We've added a new video partner in C-SPAN. So we have a fresh set of videos that address topics that didn't really seem to matter too much in 2000. Things like superdelegates. Who are these people? We've updated the Learn More section, which has a much deeper set of background information about some of the topics and experiences that you run across in the game. We added a save the game feature so that you can stop at any point and resume on another day at another time. The one caveat of that is it works by essentially putting a cookie on your machine, so you have to do it from the same machine, but still allows you that flexibility.
From a teacher perspective, that's an awesome upgrade because, as we'll see from when we play the game, it's very involved, and so when we went to a classroom setting and maybe we're in the lab for a 45-minute period, a lot of times students wouldn't be able to finish an entire game. And so what they would do is they would adjust by trying to rush through. And there's so many decisions to be made, and there's so much quality that goes on in the thinking process. This really makes the game much, much more effective because then the students can save it, come back, they're not rushed. So that's a great feature if you've used it in the past that you can use on the new one.
You have the opportunity to play either against the computer or against an opponent. We also added a computer-controlled third-party option. The third-party candidate can never win, but it can play havoc with the rest of the election. As you might recall from, what was it, 2000? And Ralph Nader's running again. We also added a report card, which at the end gives you the opportunity to print out a list of the moves and decisions that were made during the game, and will highlight instances where you made a decision or took a course of action that was in conflict with your platform. So that gives kids the opportunity to reflect on what they were doing as you're playing a game. Typical gameplay doesn't allow you any opportunities to reflect or learn or consider what you were doing. So this is a way of, at the end of the game, going back and not only seeing how well you did, but also where you might have gone wrong and opportunities to sort of analyze things further. We've also completely updated and revised the teacher guide and included a section called Vote Notes, which are suggestions for further research topics, a lot of suggestions for using it in the classroom. And big importance, it is now been mapped to state standards. Rather than have you run across the videos willy-nilly, there's a section in the teacher guide where all the videos are listed and you can preview them and decide which ones you might really want to focus on. So, a lot of improvements there. So, let's dive right in. Because there's this competition thing that kids are really into, we built in a thing where you just sign up by school and it will tell you how many schools or which schools are playing it the most. It's just been surprisingly interesting in ginning up interest. But, one of my brothers lives in Camp Verde.
Yes, so that's your hometown.
Does it matter what operating system you're using?
The only problem is, and Virginia can shout out a correction if I'm wrong, some of the newer Macs that have the AMD chip have a problem with Shockwave, which is based on this game, but otherwise, they're okay.
Otherwise. Regardless of Firefox or Safari, or does it matter?
The browser doesn't matter.
Yes, it does, actually.
So what it's doing right now is downloading enough of the game to identify it on the computer. There we go. One of the other things that we haven't talked about yet that's a change is we have a virtual host. George Washington is going to bring some of the game logic into the open. Some of the things we found first time around that were built into the game were not obvious to people. you don't think about the assumptions behind a game. You treat it as if everything in it was accurate and so on. One of the things is that at the beginning of every game, the computer randomly assigns to states positions on each of the possible issues. So in one game, Texas might be as red can be, and in the next game, Texas could be a blue state. And it will change every game, so that no game will ever be the same. But people, in the old game, there was one page of dense text sitting all this out that people might have spent 1/8 of a second, you know, just as long as it took to find the next button. George Washington also can talk, but you can turn that off because you can imagine what fun that would be in a computer lab.
Labs have 25 kids.
So you have the option to start a new game or play a saved game at this point, and we're going to start a new game. The saved game is listed up there as Woman. What should we call it, Eric?
Our game? Okay. Battle.
Our game. Creating a new game. So we're going to choose a two-player game. Settings and options down here is where you turn on and off the sound of George Washington. So we're each going to be candidates. We can choose the political party we're going to play as and give ourselves names. I am going to be player one. You can imagine how much fun kids could have naming their own candidate. What would you like, Republican or Democrat?
Republican.
Okay. And for this, I'm not going to do a third-party candidate, just in the interest of time. So we each have to choose five positions that will make up our platform. What would you like?
I'm going to go with education. Shocker. Defense. Let's go green with the environment. Taxes and national security.
Okay, and just to be contrary, I will choose all the ones you didn't.
You always have to pick the ops.
Yes. Now that we've picked the issues, we have to determine how we stand on the issues. And you can change from support to opposed just by clicking on each issue. So how do you feel about these?
Well, for sure, one thing, like what I've seen with this game is I can talk about what affirmative action is in my class, but until the students are playing the game, when they play the game, suddenly they need to understand what affirmative action is and what, you know, immigration policy is. And so this is where I get a ton of questions where students are coming up and they're saying, hey, am I for affirmative action? What does that mean? And so it's got a lot of realistic justification because, I mean, when they're sitting in class, it might not mean anything to them when I'm talking about it, but now it does. And so there's a lot of learning that takes place when they're setting up their platform and stuff like that.
So bearing in mind this is a room full of teachers, how do you feel about No Child Left You're right next to a door. You can go either way.
I do not support the reauthorization. So
okay. We've changed that.
I got to meet the president about 2 months ago. I had like 20 seconds with him. Cut taxes. Yes.
Cut taxes? Okay.
That's fine, yeah. Support Patriot Act, sure.
Increase spending in defense?
Sure.
Of course.
Okay. Do you certify that these are your positions?
Strong.
So how did you get rid of the first one?
You click on it and it will change.
It'll go to the opposite.
So I'm supporting universal health care. I can oppose quotas or favor continued. I'm going to oppose criminalizing illegal immigrants. I'll support public financing. And I will slow down the job loss to other countries. I'll certify that that's my position.
Now, I'm sure some people are saying, now, my students are not going to be able to remember what position they have. Yeah. There's a way as you're playing the game where you have a listing of how you feel on each issue. So you don't have to memorize this and remember for the next hour.
Do you always match up to a student against a student, or is it played by the whole class? Or
You can do it like we're doing it now. You can do it as a demonstration where you divide the class as two different parties and having to make decisions. You can do it as groups.
Most often I have them go to a lab and just pair up, or if I have a student that wants to play by themselves, I let them play it against the computer.
And one of the things we've heard from teacher feedback is that it can be effective to do it as we're doing it now, to demonstrate a brief section of the game to get kids familiar with how it works and to model the kind of thinking you want them to use as they're going through the game. And if you only have one computer, one projector, and a whiteboard, that's your choice there too. So of these five items, we can pick up to three that are going to be our key items, the things we're really running on, and these have a heavier weighting in the results as you go through.
I'm going to go education, national security, and defense.
And I'll go
Eric, when you're doing this with your kids, do you try to get them to be thinking about Republicans and Democrats and how they would be on the issues, or are you letting the kids do their real...
I kind of let the kids do their own exploration, and I mean that, you know, I'm sure everybody gets that question, what's the difference between a Republican and a Democrat? So I think it'd be better to do this first and then kind of come back and say, you know, well, this is how, you know, especially now, this is how McCain feels about this issue, this is how Obama feels. I mean, you could do it either way, but I just kind of let the students, you know, kind of play first, and then it's something we can build a foundation on and then discuss. Otherwise, they might not have a real idea about what these issues mean beforehand.
Yeah, and if you are doing this over a period of time, integrating it with your entire unit on elections, you can get kids involved in, like, creating bumper stickers and campaign materials that match the positions they're doing there and give them some little creative free reign and artistic license in doing so.
And you could have new speeches, I mean, like, do a two-minute speech, and, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff you could do with extensions of it.
So we have set our positions. Now, here's where George is telling us about the way the game resets each state with a position on all of the issues, and what's new this year is that you can tell how that breaks down by simply you'll get polling results that will tell you where the polls are at this moment in time, and also whether that state agrees with your issue, disagrees with it, or neutral, and then also highlights the key issue, whether they agree with you or disagree with you. So if we took a look at some non-controversial state like, Florida, then you see that here Florida is agreeing with the Democrat position on affirmative action, disagreeing on immigration, disagreeing on campaign reform. They strongly agree with Eric's position on national security, disagree on defense, disagree on education, for instance. Florida's kind of schizophrenic in this one. They disagree with his position on taxes, agree with mine on economy, disagree with his on environment, so on. And you can tell that it's reasonably close, 39% to 34%. So this could shift. I mean, both of us only have one key issue where they agree with us. They actually disagree with me on two key issues and disagree with Eric on only one. So this could be one where he wants to campaign because it's close.
And this information is based on?
On the way the computer sets. At the beginning of each game, the computer randomly assigns positions on all these issues to each state.
So it's
not real. And it changes every game. You can also get into advanced strategy, which gives kids more tips on the game. It'll tell you things like you can spend a lot of money in this. You can spend about 75-80% of your entire bankroll each turn and still have plenty of money to keep going.
Can the students change the settings, or can you lock them off for your school?
You can't set up like a school setting or anything. It's just up to individual play and what the students want to set up.
So we're at the ready for the first turn. And as Eric mentioned, we don't have to remember our positions on the issue because they show up right there. Whenever it's my turn, my positions will be right here. This is my current bankroll right now, and we're pretty even on the polling. What this is a running counter on if the election were held today, how many electoral votes would I have locked up? So this is actually a good indication of how well you're doing in the game. So I'm going to start. A filmmaker attacks an opponent in a documentary. What do you think the chances are? So, since they're attacking my opponent, do I want to take my family out to see the film in a local theater? That would be lovely. Nice family.
Is this a Republican filmmaker?
Crazy. Can release a statement criticizing the filmmaker for being unfair, or I can... Go out with the filmmaker for probably I'm the Democrat. That would be a wine and cheese reception, right? So what should I do? I'm gonna make this side of the room my party advisors. What should I do?
Release a statement
criticizing the unfair treatment. Okay, well, let's try it. Nice touch. So on each turn, you'll get like a chance card, and it could be a lucky break, it could be breaking news, it could be a skeleton in the closet that you'll have to react to. Next step, you have to decide where you want to campaign. You can campaign in up to three states in any turn. So here's where things are breaking right now. The dark blue states are ones that I'm comfortably ahead in. The light blue states, like Ohio, I have a small lead. The gray states are totally up for grabs, and the same with the red. Right now, Eric is ahead in places like California and Arizona, slightly ahead in West Virginia, and so forth. So I might want to do something like check Florida and see if it's something that I want to secure. I'm going to go there because that's an important one. How am I doing in Pennsylvania? Okay, I'm a little behind. It's kind of a lot like Florida, it's close. I'm gonna see if I can swing the needle a little bit here. And let me see about Michigan. I'm a little ahead in Michigan. I've got good numbers, but so does Eric. I think I'm gonna try and defend Michigan here. So those are gonna be my three states. They've turned this sort of sickly orange color. So those are my three states. I have to do a fundraiser. What, like that happens in politics? So this is an important part because you have to do fundraisers that match your positions in order to be successful. So anti-immigration, that's probably not going to be good. Domestic peace concert, I don't really have a position on peace. Pro-diversity book sale, affirmative action, well, that matches my support for affirmative action, so that sounds like a winner.
If you had chosen one of the others, your return probably would not.
Right, there's some that if you contradict yourself, you get raised no money.
Okay. There's consequences.
You know, actually, just for the heck of it, let's find out. Bowling. Everybody loves bowling, right? How could I lose? That didn't go very well. So that's reminding you what the problem is. You're contradicting yourself. And reminding you to look down here to see where the issues are.
If the audio's on, George Washington is scolding you.
You didn't know how hard it was to find an audio recording of George Washington.
I told my kids that, and one of them goes, "Really?" It took a long time.
So I raised nothing from that bid for me. Current bankroll, $195,000. I'm going to crank the spending up to 74%, but you can just move the bar to change the spending. And we're done. So, Eric's turn.
Yay!
Go, Red!
Yay, Eric!
Judgment. Wow, this is going to be bad at home too. Okay, meet with your advisors and plan an appropriate response to this delicate situation. Hold a press conference to support your spouse and celebrate the individual freedoms of the American political system. I'm going to pick the middle one because I have no idea what I should do. I'm going to check with the advisors.
Yeah, I could ask my wife.
What about the middle one?
All right, one.
Okay, we could also do nothing. You want to do nothing or do you want
to
do the middle
one? You need to pay attention.
Let's check with the advisors.
Okay, they go with the middle one?
Yeah.
Safe response. That's,
oh, yeah.
Given the options, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Brian, could you read the cards? We can't see them too well back here.
Oh, okay.
That one said that was a safe response. It didn't really bump the numbers one way or another. So now it's Eric's turn to choose three states in which he wants to campaign. What would you like to look at?
The biggest one without a real clear cut is Pennsylvania, so let's go to Pennsylvania and see what that.
So it's reasonably close. That could swing.
Let's go ahead and pick that as one of the three.
Okay. And you don't necessarily have to pick three states. It doesn't really help you that much if you only campaign in one rather than three.
Missouri is always a swing state. That's where I'm from. So let's go with Missouri and see what that. Let's go.
That looks possible. The only key issue that they agree on anybody with is national security, but the three key issues for me they disagree, and they only disagree with two, so you're
a little ahead.
It's a 2-point difference. That's a good choice.
Okay. Let's check that Tennessee. Let's see what's up in Tennessee.
Another close one.
They support me in education.
But can you only choose undecideds, or can you choose something that's locked up by another party?
I could go in and look at New York.
I could choose Texas, for example. I'm down 17 percentage points in Texas, so that might not.
Probably not worth it there. Yeah, that's a close one where you might want to do North Carolina.
North Carolina?
Yeah. Okay, so three states selected. This is one where if you have groups of kids, small groups of kids, like two or three that are playing as a team, they can get into a lot of discussion about why they want to go to one state or another and like the. So going to raise money. Now George Washington disappears after you've been through the process, so he doesn't show up every turn telling you, now's the time to raise money. But if you make an error, like if you contradict one of your issues during the course, he will point that out to you. It's a terrible nag. You know, he wrote that book where he hand-copied all these rules about matters when he was a kid. I'm sure that plays into it somehow.
All right, so my choices, I could do a country club champagne brunch, dine at Posh Club with Wall Street financiers to raise funds to support tax cuts. I could do an international film festival, do international film fest with pro-diversity folks for affirmative action.
No position.
Looking down here, I don't really have a position on that. On this one, I do support tax cuts. And then ice cream social, organized dessert party fundraiser to oppose increased defense spending. So obviously that would be a bad one for me. Let's go ahead and go with the champagne brunch.
Oh, yeah, they wanted to see what happens when you do it the wrong way with me. Everybody's just quiet and you do it right.
Hey, my spouse switched parties, Frank.
Good choice. Campaign contributions are an important but complex part of the election process. Click Learn More button to find out some of the history of campaign fundraising and financing. We will do that in just a moment. So here's Learn More.
Oh.
And we'll go right into that. At any point in the game, you can delve in to learn more, which is good when questions come up about issues or events. Pulls out, you have an index down the left-hand side. So campaign contributions is already highlighted there. On the far right, there is more detailed explanation, links to more information like the Federal Elections Commission, where you can delve deeper into some of the aspects of this. You also have the option of watching several videos from our partner network. So let's see what CNN Student News has to say about money and politics.
It takes dough to run a presidential campaign. Millions and millions of dollars for commercials and conventions and conferences and commuting all over the country. But should the amount of money you have determine your chances of becoming president? Let's say you're trying to get your brother elected to public office, but your neighbor is doing the same thing for his brother. You put up $100 for your brother's campaign, your neighbor puts up $1 million. His brother can buy more commercials, travel more, basically have a better chance of winning. Not exactly an even playing field. So, in the early 20th century, President Theodore Roosevelt and Congress got rolling on campaign finance reform. Yikes, sounds complicated. They just wanted to make it so that no matter how much money you have access to or which big company supports you, everyone would have a fair shot at the White House. Fast forward to 1971 and poof, the Federal Election Campaign Act. This laid down new rules for campaign contributions, and it later created an enforcer, the Federal Election Commission. There are three main goals of the FEC. One, keep tabs on money used to pay for federal elections. Two, make sure candidates publicly say or disclose where their money came from. And finally, regulate or control how public cash can be used to pay for campaigns. For example, you can personally give money to a political candidate, but only up to $2,300 per candidate per election. Also, businesses and unions cannot give money directly to a political candidate. That would be like buying an election. However, there is a sort of loophole here. Political action committees, PACs, are organizations that represent interest groups and try to get someone elected or keep someone out of office. Businesses, and you for that matter, can create PACs and give them money. And that's controversial because some critics think PACs have too much influence. But the FEC requires PACs to say how much money they raise and spend. So you see, it all comes back to cash and keeping track of it. Because in Washington, money talks, and the commission wants to keep it honest. Carl Azus, CNN Student News.
So that could be like a whole class period right there. How about me?
Well, like if this was, I was from the summertime, but for example, you know, last week when Obama gave $2,300 to Hillary, you know, and kids would ask, you know, oh, he has that millions of dollars, why would he give $2,300? And then you kind of get into what?
Can you do the learn more without actually playing the game?
If you start it and then go into the teacher...
You have to start it, but you don't have to go into the actual game part to learn more. And as Eric mentioned, this is probably as good a time as any. At the bottom of the screen at all times are some things that you probably can't see on the screen, but this is Cable in the Classroom to remind you who we are. Some things about elections, a teacher's section, privacy statement about collecting data, not doing some words about the design and FAQs. If we go into the teachers section, which shows up on all screens, we can tell you a little bit about what's in there. There's a link where we have elections mapped to the state standards of all the states in D.C. There's learning guides, which are teaching ideas, tips, suggestions for using in the classroom, information about registering to vote in the various states. Definitions, this is sort of, I'm blanking on the word, glossary, thank you, of some of the terms used. A little more information on the various issues that you were asked to pick as part of your platform. Links to various other sites that deal with elections, teaching about elections. This is where you preview any of the videos you want. You can print all of the Learn More section at this point. You can see it and print it. It's a PDF file. And you can take a survey to see what you thought of the game, which we encourage anybody to do if they want to use it with their kids. But
so, I mean, you could easily just set it up and then go into the preview game videos and use all the resources in advance if you want to.
So this just lists all the sections that have videos, like for primaries and caucuses. And then that one has two, one from CNN, one from C-SPAN Student News. You could watch them there. Decide if they're ones that you want to point out to your students and make sure they see.
Frank, how frequently do you update the videos on this section? I was thinking like Obama saying, well, I'm not going to take any federal money. So, I mean, is that...
We are not intending to update it at this point going into this. During the process, we had the game basically done and we're testing it, and then all the superdelegate talk was going on. So my colleague Robin asked CNN, if you got anything that explains superdelegates? So this is all under the teachers section. Back to the game, and it's Eric's turn to decide how much money he wants to spend in the next turn. Crank it up.
Price is right. Let's go with 85%.
And he's done. Let's see what happens here. So it's my turn. This is reminding me of what happened last turn, and every turn you get a fresh infusion of cash. Again, this is sort of the area that tells us how well we're doing. One of the things we found in testing it with kids is they get hung up on the game pieces moving around the board. And they think that the measure of how well they're doing is whether they're ahead or behind on physical progress. But then they notice that there are these key points in the game, one of which is when you declare your candidacy, primaries, securing the nomination at your convention, and the general election itself. And funny, but all the candidates wind up on those squares at the same time. So the game is rigged. But what they're missing is that it's not the physical progress through the game that tells you whether you're winning or losing. It's this down here that gives an indication of how well you're doing. The actual spinner is to randomize the cards that come up, whether it's good news, bad news, breaking news, skeleton in the closet. The only purpose of the spinner is to randomize that. But you will wind up on the same squares for the primaries because, by golly, in most cases, both candidates are going to have to be in the primary in the same state in the same day. So you've had a flavor of what a turn is like. I'm going to get out of this one and go to one that we had.
We stop now. I know if we played one more turn, Frank's skeleton in the closet would be like dancing on the table at Coyote Ugly on the riverfront.
Okay. So if I did this right, we should be at near the end. And I'm never sure whether I'm on the last turn or not.
About how long does it take to play a game?
If you're fast, you can, and you're familiar with the game, you can get it done in half an hour or so. Kids that are unfamiliar, you're going to be stretched to get it done in a class period.
Like, when I encourage my students to really take time to read, all their options and stuff, and so
I think another turn.
I think about an hour is kind of a good starting place, maybe like to find.
Okay, team. My opponent tells a racist story. That never happens.
I don't have a sense of humor.
I appear enlightened by comparison, and that's really hard to make me appear enlightened. So what do? Do I issue an immediate statement attacking Eric for his racist beliefs, calling him unfit for office? Do I go on the attack, make a ferocious attack? I rarely get a chance like this. Or do I move back, sit down with my advisors, prepare a statement, and wait to be asked? Or nothing.
You don't have enough money.
Excellent point. You have to pay attention to your bankroll and what you can afford. And if I tried to do that, it would tell me I didn't have enough money. Pick again.
No, you have to make a statement.
Yeah. I have to make a statement. Is that this one?
Do nothing.
I think the tendency is a little towards doing nothing, so let's see what happens. And no action taken, polling numbers remain unchanged.
Should we go back and look at the other?
There's the jet plane for me traveling to the next
one. If you could, you know, I mean, as a teacher maybe, not as a student, go back and say, now, what, you know, if you had picked this option, this is what would have happened.
Because it's randomized.
Yeah.
Well, but once the game starts, it's no longer randomized. I mean, it's already got the whole game set.
I don't think you can go back, though, and make another decision.
So you can't play
that
thing over.
But that's a great talking point at the end.
Yeah, and that's it.
I'd like to know.
And when you print it, you can print out the report. And so, you know, you're going to say, at this point of the game, this was maybe a key part where we could have done something different.
So I'm not doing really well, and I'm trying to race through this so we can talk a little bit about research. So if Eric doesn't mind, I'm just going to go randomly through and get to the
end. I'm putting my campaign in your hands. My spouse is probably running your campaign.
Here comes your skeleton.
I'd actually set this up as a one-player thing, just I could whip through this quickly. And you notice, because I'm just doing sort of random things, here we are near the end of the game. My candidate is the 82 out of 538. We're not doing really well. Okay.
Here we are.
So our internet connection is
cracking.
I'm going to try. The sound is cutting out. That would never happen in a school either. But what's fun is what happens now, because it's election night. So watch what happens to the map when we...
Yeah. Oh, what a surprise.
So in this...
Yes, Eric.
I'll give you a cap.
In spite of your wife leaving...
Lost your wife.
Yeah, I lost my wife.
But I lost my bid.
I'll give you a gavel position.
Okay, so here's where you can view the report card, which has... You can print this out. It has a lot of various information. The key things here is when you get down to the game sequence, it tells you, you know, kind of what you did, what happened. You decided to go to the movies. You decided to campaign here. You held the disco party, raised $30,000, spent bankroll, polling, electoral vote stand. So it goes through turn by turn, and you can go back and kind of reflect on things. And print it, have them turn it in if you want to. And that's the end of the game, at which point you could play another game or do whatever you want to sign, you know, have a conversation about it.
Can students log in from home and work on it?
Yeah, anywhere you have web access. So
they would not be able to start a game in school and continue it at home because it has to be on the same computer.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I thought you meant just a play.
But they can play it, so they can't mess up the game you're doing in the classroom, but they can play it.
Right.
But they can use their laptop.
If they have a laptop that they can use in both places, yeah, because it depends on the computer, not the connection. I had loaded some of this at the hotel last night. Just in case. I have a thumb drive, I have two people with computers in the back of the room. Teachers, you're... Yeah.
So once your school belongs, your students can do it anywhere, from home, from school, whatever?
Yeah, and you don't have to actually belong to anything. It's open to anybody on our website.
I mean, I've had students go home and play it against their parents.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty cool.
You had a question.
I may have missed this, but does the level of difficulty depend on high school, middle school, elementary, or is it just the same difficulty level?
It's the same difficulty, and how you wish to set it up, you can use it anywhere from elementary up. At elementary, you won't probably not go into the level of analysis on where to campaign. You might do that more of just a strict geography and colors and not get into all the issues. And you can do that in a lot of ways. The question had to do with whether the level of difficulty changed if you were signing on as an elementary school, middle school, or high school.
Eric, do you do any kind of assessment when you have kids play the game? Do you get them a grade, in other words?
I haven't. Now, we use it primarily in the fall when we do our election unit. And so when this came out in the spring, my students played it just kind of as an extra thing we did, like one day in the lab and stuff. So what I'll probably do this next fall is I'll have them actually print out the grade report. And I haven't figured out if I'm actually going to do an assessment piece with it. I mean, I do several different assessment pieces with the election unit that we do. But I'll probably have them print out the grade report, and then it'll be something that we could go back and at least look at.
See, I had my kids just fill out a survey, mainly because I was sending frank information about what they liked and didn't like about the game, and I just gave them a grade simply for playing it.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be hard to kind of, I mean, whether they win or lose would be hard. It fits in so naturally with the curriculum. There's going to be tons of ties, but it might be a little tough to put into like a rubric or assessment.
Question's been about assessment. Yes, question?
In a lab setting, do you let, two kids play over here on this computer and you separate them? How does that work?
Question about a lab setting and setup.
We have a lab of about 25 computers, and that typically have 25 to 30 kids in a class, so we'll just go into the lab, and sometimes I'll assign them. Usually I just allow them to partner up with somebody. But yeah, they just sit at one computer together. And they're very engaged. I don't have any students that are like, oh man, I got to play this election game.
It's actually something that comes up in the research. Maybe we can dive into that for just a minute. Those of you that were here and paying attention at the very beginning probably noticed that there was not a word about research in either Eric's or my biography and introductions. Which may make you wonder why we're going to be talking about research now, but you'll be pleased to know that we did stay in a Holiday Inn last night. So. Yeah. We actually hired a company called Macro International during the month of May 2008 to find out what people were doing with the game. And what they did was looked at the Google Analytics data that we're collecting, did the teacher surveys that I told you could do on the website, and went to a high school and did observations in three classes, and then spoke to the teachers and students. So, quick highlight, there are some limitations in that. We're not talking about statistically representative surveys, large numbers. It's a very limited time frame, and we're talking about the end of the school year where most of the content had already been taught. And this was being used as an extension or an add-on activity, a way of reinforcing things that they'd already learned. Given that, some of the numbers are encouraging for us. People tend to spend a fair amount of time on this, go fairly deep into it, 14, almost 15 pages in at any one session. And perhaps most important for us is about a minute and a half on each page. That's some significant time to think and digest and talk about it, and a ratio of new versus returning people about 60-40, so a lot of people coming back playing part of it and going on. Again, we're not talking Google numbers here, about 4,500 people at the end of a school year in a month, but a fairly significant portion of them make it all the way through. They're not getting a lot of drop-off. This is milestone one, is the point in the game where you declare candidacy, primary elections, securing the nomination at convention and the general election, so pretty decent numbers. The teacher survey was with 20 teachers. Most of them are in secondary schools, as you might expect. They all would recommend it on a Likert scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being the highest. 85% thought it was a 4 or a 5, and helpful in teaching the electoral process. They gave high marks for the graphics, videos. Almost half the teachers explicitly used the videos as part of the instructions to the kids in the game. It was easy to use, and 68% got some use out of the learning guides. How it was used, by and large, is an extension activity rather than the primary instructional activity around elections. Structured rather than just turning kids loose. The multiple class periods very high, I'm pleased with that, and generally in using students in pairs or teams rather than having them do it individually. The observations were in a Montgomery County, Maryland high school in three classes. One was AP Honors, one was the standard class, and one was inclusion. Two of them did it as a structured activity. The AP Honors turned the kids loose. Might feel a little more comfortable turning kids loose in an AP Honors class. No. The teacher in the inclusion class felt that with a little bit of scaffolding, those kids did really well. There were some of the vocabulary terms they had a little difficulty with, but otherwise they did well with it. In the structured activity where they had certain things they were responsible for, that the students were pretty much all engaged on task throughout the period. The student versus student one led to a lot of discussions, much deeper discussions and thought about it, and in the end, a better understanding. And that one of the things that the teachers and the students both said was that this gave them, the kids, a chance to apply some of the things that they'd heard about, to, as Eric said, think about things that they've heard in a lecture or read in the book or done in an activity and actually kind of bring it to life and go, oh, this is what that means, how it applies. And, some of the comments we got from the teachers was they really liked it as an end of unit review or an end of semester thing, to just, okay, you've been studying about elections for 2 weeks, let's bring everything we learned together in this game. Love the report card feature. We thought that while the fact that it has these video game kind of attributes that got the kids engaged in the first place, but was really valuable, was having them get into the strategy and tactics of the election. And that, as Eric mentioned, it sparked a lot of conversation about current events and issues in the campaign. How does this fundraiser support this issue? What exactly do we mean by the Patriot Act? Does everybody, the Patriot Act was big in the news 4 years ago. You don't hear much about it now. It's still there. Student comments, the things that really they seem to like the most was seeing consequences of their actions. Okay, they make a decision, they get feedback right away. This is what happened and why. They enjoyed being able to pick their own issues and then having to actually stay true to the issues and think about, does this support my platform? And a few of them said, well, now I can sort of begin to understand why the candidate, it's so difficult to run, why there's so much pressure on candidates. We had done, as part of the teacher survey, a drawing for an iPod. If you didn't take part in the teacher survey, you can tune out for the next minute, but we also said we'd announce the winner at this session, just in case the winner is here. So, drum roll please. Anne from Levine wins an iPod. I don't know if she's here. If not, we'll send it to her. That's another thing about Cable in the Classroom. Periodically give prizes. Fun job. So that concludes our presentation about elections. We're happy to answer other questions about it. And this is the URL where you can find it. And
the Speaking of History podcast is produced by Eric Langhorst, an 8th grade American history teacher at South Valley Junior High in Liberty, Missouri. This podcast has a Creative Commons Attribution non-commercial license. Show notes, links, videos, and pictures are available at www.speakingofhistory.blogspot.com. Music used in the intro and close is Technotrip, a track by Sounds Abound. You can learn more about their royalty-free music for schools at their website, www.soundzabound.com. Comments or questions about the podcast are always welcome, and you can contact Eric at speakingofhistory@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and please remember, history is so much more than just a bunch of boring old dead guys.